Americans love lists. Check out any sports radio program, NFL Network, you can always find a top 10 show, top 10 greatest quarterbacks, top 10 greatest Super Bowls. Back in 2005, the Discovery Channel polled its history buff viewers and came up with a super list of the 100 greatest Americans. Now, I won't tell you who turned out to be the number one greatest American, but I will say that the list proved that Americans were still in need of a few good history teachers. Actually, my students have a rather love-hate relationship with the lists I give them. They're called study guides. 60 terms, 4 essays. Somehow, students always want shorter lists like that. And then, what would a trip to the doctor's office be without the list of your prescription meds? Mine has gotten so long I had to create an acronym to be able to remember them all. The mnemonic device is GLATCANS. G stands for gabapentin. L stands for lisinopril. I would tell you the whole list, but some of that information is classified. Well, it seems that the Corinthians were fond of lists, too. They had developed a short list of their favorite preachers in ascending order. Number 4 was Apollos. Number 3 was Paul. Number 2 was Peter. And number 1, naturally, was Christ. Now, I don't know how those super spiritual Corinthians ever had a chance to hear Christ preach, since, of course, he was gone by the time they became Christians. But a list is a list is a list. And not only that, they had a list of congregational problems enough, long enough to make an apostle's head swim. Sexual immorality among the members. Thank God we don't have that one that I know of. Debates about what women should wear on their heads, who should be able to speak in church, who's got spiritual gifts, who speaks in tongues. And then, whether or not Paul, who had actually lived with them for 18 months, whether Paul had a right to give the Corinthians apostolic advice. My goodness, what's an apostle to do? Well, I'll tell you what he did. He decided to fight fire with fire, or, as it were, lists with a list of his own. His list is a list of hardships that he had endured over the 20 years since he'd answered the call to become an apostle. That's not an exhaustive list. That would take too long. It was a symbolic. It was a short list of travails that he had had over the years and which apostolic ministry had brought him. He speaks in the editorial we when he starts the list, but he says, "We are afflicted in every way, perplexed, persecuted." A lot of people in America like that one these days. Struck down. Yes, it's a short list. It's not a short list that people would want to be on, however. And frankly, mentioning these hardships didn't seem to do Paul very much good. All it did was add fuel to the Corinthians' fire. It seems fighting fire with fire, list with list, didn't do even an apostle very much good. Maybe that's because there are always some people who think, people in and out of the church, or at least around the periphery of the church, who think that hardships are all banished from a Christian's experience. One of the factions in Corinth really thought this. If you were really an apostle, if you were really spiritual, Paul, you wouldn't be having all these problems. Like Jerry Falwell, the late Jerry Falwell, clamoring that his school, Liberty University, was a place for champions for Christ, always champions, winners. I guess no losers ever went to Liberty. Like a drunken Crimson Tide fan with a three-word vocabulary. We're number one. We're number one. I can say that. I'm one of them. The Crimson Tide fan, not the drunken part. And some of the descendants of these, contemporary descendants of these Corinthians, have been known to go around singing what must be the dumbest and the most untruthful lyric, Christian lyric, ever set to music. Now, I know I'm going to make somebody mad, because somebody's going to like this song, and actually I do too. I just wish Jeff would write some new lyrics for it. Every day with Jesus is sweeter than the day before. Every day with Jesus, I love him more and more. Jesus saves and keeps me. He's the one I'm living for. Every day with Jesus is sweeter than the day before. Get real. One day, we're feeling fine, and the next day, you're in an emergency room having a heart attack. Anybody who thinks that that day is sweeter than the day before needs more than his heart examined. I don't think anybody could make that claim with a straight face who had been a Christian more than one or two days. And so, you know, Paul wouldn't buy that. He ran to a more honest theology, the kind sung by Frank Sinatra more than 50 years ago. That's life. That's what all the people say. Riding high in April, shot down in May. And Paul would have had something to say to them. They would say to Paul, well, you know, we like our apostles to be more spiritual than this. And that's what you'd expect, because the church always has some folk around and inside who go around pretending that everything's always wonderful when it's really not. To all of that, Paul would say, well, at least the part that I can repeat in church. Paul would say, of course there is hardship. We are earthen vessels. This outer nature, this body we live in, this visible part of who we are, it's an earthen vessel. It's not made of gold or silver. It's not made of something as tough as diamonds. Whatever else you say about an earthen vessel, it is, well, we are, as we sang a little while ago, frail children of dust and feeble as frail. And you know that's the truth. We are frail. We are feeble. We are fragile, we are breakable, and we are also replaceable. Not only Paul, but John Wesley talked about this. He said, our earthen existence is subject to, here's the quote, death and its forerunners. I like that. Death and its forerunners, sickness, weakness, and pain, and 1,000 infirmities. And likewise, error in 10,000 shapes. Now, who would have thought you could get wisdom like that from a Methodist? Hardships, of course. What else should we expect? We are earthen vessels. But that's only half the story. In those earthen and oft-times earthy vessels, we find treasure. We find treasure beyond belief. The treasure Paul's talking about is that even with these earthen vessels of ours, we get to share, as it were, in Paul's apostleship. We get to do what Paul did. We get to represent Jesus in the world we live in. We have the opportunity to emulate the sacrificial life of Jesus in our frail and eventually our broken down bodies. We are all able to make the life of Jesus visible in these weak vessels and in the world that we move out into when we leave these walls. And finding practical, everyday ways of embodying the life and the death of Jesus, that's our challenge day by day. But it is precisely in doing that that Paul says we renew our inner nature. And it is precisely by living out the sacrificial death of Jesus that we are raised up with Jesus in renewal and in resurrection. There's a woman, young woman in Roswell, Georgia, named Mariana. She works at Hooters. Now, I bet that's the first time the word Hooters has ever been uttered from this pulpit. And before you draw any conclusions about where I eat when I'm in the metro Atlanta area, although I have eaten at Hooters in Macon, to be honest, I didn't learn about her by going to Hooters this past week. I learned about her on the radio driving around Atlanta and listening to 680 The Fan. They interviewed her. Now, I have to admit, her voice fit the stereotype. I suspect I'm never going to see Mariana in any of my classes at the great university. Earthen vessel, I suppose. But then she said that she read her Bible, or she prayed, and she read her Bible, and that convinced her, because Jesus had given his life for us, that convinced her to donate one of her kidneys, not for a relative, but for one of the regular customers at the restaurant where she works. Oh, yes. The treasure. The treasure. About 6 months after writing this letter to the Corinthians, Paul wrote another letter to the Romans with another list in it. You go to the 16th chapter of Romans and you find a chapter where there's nothing in it, no great theology. There's nothing in it but a list of names. And believe it or not, Dr. Fred Craddock, formerly professor of preaching at Emory's Candler School of Theology, preached one of the best sermons I have ever heard on that chapter with nothing but a list of names in it. Google it. Go listen to it. It's called When the Roll is Called Down Here. I was reminded of that sermon about three Sundays ago, 4 days after my heart attack. It was real early in the morning. Linda was still asleep. And I was at the computer, and I found on Facebook a long list of names of people who had gone on there to wish me their good wishes. Now, I'm about to call the roll down here. And if that bores you, then I suggest you just take out a pen or a pencil and at the bottom of your bulletin, write the words, I thank my God for every remembrance of blank. And every time I mention a name, you put in a name of your own. That way, at least the time will be well spent. So to call the roll, there was Carolyn Shahid Feigelson from my grammar school. She was the beautiful but somewhat airheaded girl that I and every other boy in seventh grade had a crush on. Earthen vessel. But 40 years later, there she was, praying for me a speedy recovery. There was Debbie Rozelle McGuire, who was writing me a dissertation about her own heart problems. Earthen vessel. But then she prayed and she gave thanks to God that I had survived and was doing so well. There was David Gillespie, my political science professor from Samford. I'd barely heard from him in 30 years, earthen vessel. But there he was writing, glad you are the tough old bird you are because you are too precious to be lost to the world. That kind of treasure, I would have another heart attack to hear. Or Les Holland, now the pastor of Trinity Baptist Church in San Antonio, but once upon a time, a seminary classmate of mine who spent the first 6 months that we knew each other calling me by the name of Art. I just didn't have the heart to tell him. Earthen vessel. But once I got to know him, I came to know the person who I would say who is more embodies pure kindness than any human being I've ever met. Or Shauna Rivers, my former colleague at Mercer University Press, and when we worked together, we fought like cats and dogs, earthen vessels. But then she wrote, love you, and when you need me, I'm there. With 4 exclamation points, buddy. That would have gotten red marks from Professor Sheridan. Earthen vessels, but what a treasure. And then there was Will Platt and his wife Roslyn. Will Platt called me the morning of my procedure. Actually, Buddy called me first, and 5 minutes later, Will called. And about a half an hour later, Jeff came to see me. About an hour after that, the pastor was there. The next day, Harold McAbee was there. Yeah, the treasure. The treasure in earthen vessels. And the longer the list grew, the more I realized that although our culture may call it social media, our faith has another name for it. Church. At its best, church. Paul Rauschenbusch is a religion editor for the Huffington Post. He's also the great-great-grandson of Walter Rauschenbusch, the great writer of the social gospel movement of the early 20th century. Paul Rauschenbusch gave a recent commencement address at a seminary, and in preparation for that address, he asked a non-Christian friend of his to do a little word association, and so he asked him, "What comes to your mind when I mention the word Christian?" His friend, just like that, said, "Close-minded, only out for themselves, wanting to tell others what to do." Now, to be fair, expectations of us church folk are often quite unreasonable, and sometimes they hold us to standards that they don't hold themselves to or anybody else. But the fact still remains, the bottom line still is, because perception is reality, when we attach the name Christian to ourselves, people really do expect us to act like Jesus, whether we do or not. Do we always act that way? No, of course we don't. We're earthen vessels. But when we do, we are what we are at our best. When we do, we become the treasure that God created us to be. When we do, we are able to see our inner selves renewed and resurrected. And then we can say we are afflicted in every way, but not crushed, perplexed, but not in despair, persecuted, maybe, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed. May you and I learn to treasure these earthen vessels that we live in and take care of the earthen vessels we live in. But more important, may we learn to treasure the earthen vessels we live with, and the earthen vessels and their treasure that we live around in our world. May we always carry in our earthen vessels the self-sacrifice and the death of Jesus, so that the resurrection of Jesus may be visible in us, both as individuals and as church. Can I get a witness? Amen. Amen. Another part of what Paul said in this chapter is, in order to get it, you have to see understand that the visible is not what matters so much. We have to be able to see the invisible. Dr. Craddock said, "Sometimes God disguises the best parts of church, and we can only see them with our eyes closed." So let us close our eyes. Let us stand up and sing this hymn, We Walk by Faith. Number 3.